Hey, thanks for downloading Garden Fork Radio. I'm Eric, your host. This is a very eclectic podcast about kind of DIY, how to make your food, garden, everything stuff. The other day, I was talking with my friend Will about this Celestial Seasonings tea that's ginger with probiotics. And I didn't know whether the probiotics were really like a real deal. Does that really work or what? And then we got a review on iTunes from a registered dietitian who listens to the show. And then I asked this dietitian to reach out to me, and she did. And so now the official Garden Fork registered dietitian, Rebecca, is here today. Hey.
Cool.
How was that for an intro?
That was perfect. And I'm really happy to have the opportunity to chat with you, Eric. As you said, I am a registered dietitian. I will put time aside any time if I can have a captive audience to talk about nutrition or food or cooking or, as you say, eclectic, whatever. I'm game. So let's do it.
So I have a kind of a dumb question. I don't really know what a registered dietitian is.
Okay. I was actually kind of hoping you would ask that.
Oh.
I sort of, you know, your conversation with Will, when you wondered if I was at my office yet, that kind of gave me a clue that perhaps some insight into what a registered dietitian is, does. Yeah, we have an office. No, we don't work on horseback or anything. I do have an office.
Sorry.
We do a lot of different things, though. But let me just give you a super quick synopsis of what it takes to get here. It's a minimum of a bachelor's degree, soon to be a minimum of a master's degree. And that's usually in some sort of food science. My particular degree is in dietetics. I'm a proud alum of Michigan State University, as I let you know in my email.
Yeah.
So anyway, after you get your degree, then you've got to do an internship, kind of similarly to how other healthcare providers do. And that internship goes anywhere from about 6 to 18 months. It may incorporate a master's degree as well. And then after that, if you put those two pieces of the puzzle together, you are qualified or ready, hopefully, to take the national registration exam. And that's a kind of an all-encompassing exam that allows you, assuming you pass it, to use the credential registered dietitian. Some people use registered dietitian nutritionist. I prefer the former, just the shorter version, or even better, just the RD after my name.
So kind of like the bar exam for lawyers. This is the test for dietitians.
Yeah, although I don't know if it's really an apples-to-apples comparison. Obviously, but I have a lot of respect for people who go through the bar exam. That's a tough one. The RD exam is no walk in the park, but, you know, we get her done. So we work in a lot of different settings. I work in both clinical and academic, and I enjoy both of those roles. They're very different. But RDs are found in many aspects of healthcare. Sometimes we specialize in things like renal care or diabetes care, that sort of thing. But it goes much broader than that. There's people who work for corporate, say corporate wellness, and they promote that side of it. We have colleagues who work in public policy, and they affect change at the government level for, say, programs like food stamps or Head Start or anywhere where people are going to be fed, and especially if they're fed on a taxpayer dime. Dietitians want to make sure that job is getting done appropriately and that we are feeding people in a manner that promotes health and wellness. So, I'm missing a lot of other different applications. Some people are in private practice. Pretty much anything you want to do with it, you can. It's a very interesting, obviously science-based field.
And we believe in science here at Garden Fork Radio. So,
evidence-based. Yep.
Yes. So, why don't we just start with the probiotic thing? Because I like to eat yogurt, and Rick has been experimenting. I don't know if experiment's the right word, but mixing different yogurt cultures to increase his microbiome. And then I'm wondering if when it hits your stomach, is this probiotic thing a real deal, or is there a right way and a wrong way to enhance your gut and all that, or what's your take on all that?
Well, yeah, probiotics are definitely a real deal, and there is science that backs this up. Let's back up, though, a little bit, if you don't mind, Eric, and let's talk first about prebiotics.
Okay. Is that okay? Yeah, you're all in charge. Right. I'm just the guy that hit the record button.
Oh, cool. I like it when I'm in charge. That's when I do my best work.
Yeah, it's my wife, too.
You know, if you fall asleep, you know, hopefully you'll wake up at it and, you know, let me know it's time to stop talking. But anyway, prebiotics. Okay, so prebiotics they're pretty simple. This is the food for your gut's biome. You use that word correctly. It's that bacteria that lives in your GI tract, more specifically in the colon. And you need to feed those bacteria. So, you know, you think about it, you're not the only thing living in your body, turns out.
Yep.
There's this bacteria that's down in the deeper southernmost regions, we'll say, of the GI tract. And the prebiotics feed that bacteria and keep that population up and healthy. So prebiotics just simply come from dietary fibers. So fiber is food, or a component of food, mostly plant-based, and we don't have the ability to digest or absorb fiber for energy. So we don't absorb it into the bloodstream. But once it gets down into the colon, that bacteria living down there, they can ferment it. Those colonies ferment it, and that's essentially the food for the biome.
Wow.
So that's the story with prebiotics. So foods that enhance that are fruits, vegetables, whole grains, anything that has dietary fiber in it. So, for instance, you might, in simple everyday foods like bananas, onions, garlic, asparagus, artichokes, any sort of whole grain that hasn't been refined, you know, to within an inch of its life. And soybeans, those types of foods are excellent fuel for that gut bacteria. So that's a really simple way to keep your gut healthy and happy. And from what we've told or what we're learning, protecting your immune system. And we can talk about the immunity factor of the gut. That's very, very fascinating, actually. So that's kind of the story with prebiotics. Really easy. Just eat fiber and your body will figure it out.
All right. I eat a lot of bananas and apples, so.
Yeah, you're good to go. You're good to go. Now, let's switch over now to the probiotics, which is the basis of your question. So those are a little bit more complicated. Those are the actual bacterial strains themselves. The live cultures that live down in your gut, they make up the biome, the flora of the GI tract. And as I alluded to before, what we think is that these really help in terms of keeping your immune function up and happy and healthy, overall protective of your health, particularly your gastrointestinal health. And so it's important that you have a healthy gut biome living there. And here's a fact that I teach in my nutrition class that kind of makes my head spin. If you were able to take the absorptive surface of the GI tract and spread it out, it is roughly the surface area of a tennis court.
Oh, wow.
So I know it's hard to imagine that, but the GI tract is not like PVC pipe. That may come as a surprise to you. It's not smooth on the inside. It's got all this tissue, and this tissue is convoluted, and it folds over on itself, and there's a lot of it. And on that tissue, there's all of these little itty-bitty fibers called villi. And
yes.
Those have even tinier little itty-bitty fibers called microvilli. And that's where you absorb all the nutrients from your body, right? So my point here is that you essentially have a doorway into your internal environment that's about the size of a tennis court. So back to the probiotic business. If you've got gut bacteria that can help you protect that, keep that locked up appropriately, and healthy, it's, you know, obviously going to enhance your overall health. That's the thought anyway. And I think there's good evidence to support that as well. So the probiotics are, again, they're the actual bacteria strains that we want to have living down there. And that comes from foods that are fermented or cultured. So you mentioned yogurt, and I'll tell you, I have eaten yogurt down there every day for more decades than I'm going to admit to you, because that will probably start to give away my age. But yeah, if yogurt protects my gut is in tip-top shape. I had it for breakfast this morning. Other things like aged cheese, kimchi, sauerkraut, the fermented fresh kind, miso. Do you ever cook with miso?
I just had miso for lunch. There's a Japanese market right near my house, and they have a whole wall of miso. So
it's crazy good. I just made a beef stew in my instant pot last night with that, and it just amps up the flavor. So anyway, other foods, tempeh. There's some cultured products. There's one I've seen. Maybe you've seen it. It comes in a little itty-bitty bottle, and the brand name is Yakuit.
No, I don't know
that. It's a little bottle. Yeah, I find it in my local grocery store in the yogurt section, but it's not dairy. I'm not entirely sure what it's made out of, to be honest with you, but it's promoted as a probiotic. So those types of foods, yeah, you get them down into the gut, and you're repopulating that flora. So back to your question about, okay, how do they work? How do you get them through? You were concerned about the acidity of the stomach, right?
Yeah, it seems like it would kill it.
Yeah.
But
well, it turns out that some strains probably don't survive the acidity, that really low pH of the stomach. However, there are some that do. And this Lactobacillus rhamnosus is apparently one of those survivors. I think there's pretty good evidence that that actually works. And I was reading up on this a little bit last night just to tune up my own understanding. This isn't exactly a pleasant dinner conversation, Eric. But
people are in their cars
anyway.
Usually, so.
Edit it out. You can edit it out if you need to. But so apparently, well, it's difficult to study this because how do you know?
Yeah.
They can do mock-ups of stomach acid and gastric transit and all this business, but that's a lab-generated sort of image of this. But what they have found, if I'm reading the material correctly, is that they have been able to actually identify yogurt strains in feces as they're looking for it. So the connection there is that if it went in and it went out and it was still intact and alive and well, it must survive.
There you go.
So that would be the evidence. So yeah, I think it does. I you know, to what degree, I don't know that we have really that question all unrolled, but I'm pretty confident in saying, yeah, when you eat that stuff, it definitely gets there, at least to some degree. So, yeah.
So this is out of left field, but I should have told you I was going to ask this question before, but there in the New York Times, there was a study that all of a sudden said it's okay to eat meat. And for a while I've been told, don't eat a lot of meat. So is that kind of is that like accepted evidence-based fact now, or is that just someone throwing something out there, or?
Well, is this in the context of gut health or just more generally?
Just general wanting to live longer.
yeah, some days that is the goal for sure.
Just get through the day.
yeah, get through the day. I am not a vegetarian. I'm not a vegan. I never will be. However, having said that, I think the balance, the whole business of balance is where your answer lies there.
All right.
I don't advise people to give up animal products if they don't wish to, because they're probably not going to do it anyway. So let's work with the evidence that we know and kind of come up with a plan that meets everybody's needs. And I always come back to, life is too short to to deny yourself things that you really, really love. And eating is, food is a joy of life in my mind. That's probably part of why I went into dietetics. But yes, you can certainly have meat and animal products in the diet. You don't have to. You can be perfectly healthy if you never eat another animal-based product. But in moderation, eating meat and animal products is healthy as well. There are some caveats there in, you know, individuals with specific health conditions that we may want to fine-tune that a little bit.
Right.
But in my world, we can make everything fit.
Yay.
So that's kind of, yeah, right? The short answer to that.
We can dive into that a little bit. So we don't want to eat bacon every day at every meal, but...
Probably not. But yeah, you know, if somebody shows up with bacon and I've decided I'm vegan, I'm going to probably, you know, hang that up for a minute.
Go to the dark side. So Rick and I were talking about rice and beans as a healthy thing. What's your take on that?
Absolutely. As I said, you get my RD stamp of 5 gold stars on that whole podcast. It was really, really interesting, and you guys had it. You had it figured out. You're right on the money.
I'm working on a video about making rice and beans in the Instant Pot. But the quandary is you have to cook the beans and the rice, and I'm trying to make it as simple as possible. So I'm working on that for everybody.
Yeah, that is challenging. I just love my Instant Pot. I just love it. But yeah, there's some nuances to sort of figure that whole business out. But let's go back to that whole thing about the rice and beans and this business, and I mentioned it in my review, of complementary protein. And this is especially important for people who do decide, especially if they are going vegan, which I endorse. If you do it appropriately, it's fine.
Yeah.
But you do have to know how to get enough protein through plant-based eating so that you meet the needs of your body and, you know, to stay healthy and all this business. So it's super easy to do. And it comes down to eating a wide variety of plant-based food. And more specifically, when you're talking protein, it comes down to eating a legume with a grain, a whole grain.
Oh.
And if you mix those up, and it doesn't even have to be the same meal. So you could have your rice in the morning, your beans for dinner, and your body will still be able to figure that all out and put together the protein components, which I'm going to dive into here in a minute, and be able to meet your body's needs. So if you don't mind, I'll unpack that.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by this, and it's kind of good. I actually... my wife and I eat pretty much vegan almost through the week, except maybe some rice and an egg or two. And it's not that hard to cook that way or eat healthy that way. But also, I think Oreo cookies are considered vegan, so you can't just eat the Oreo cookies or something.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I could go on and on. Yes. So,
well, let's
go
through what you were talking about.
Okay. Yeah. You may need to keep me on track because I can just ramble. So let's rewind this a little bit. So when you're talking about protein, proteins are made of smaller chemical structures that are known as amino acids. And here is my analogy that I use in the classroom. Have you ever played Scrabble, Eric?
Yeah. I like Scrabble.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. So think of your little shelf there, you know, your little shelf, your wooden shelf with your tiles on it, and you've made the word protein, okay, P-R-O-T-E-I-N. Mm-hmm. And now it's not going to fit anywhere, so you're not going to get the extra, I don't know, 50 points or whatever, and you're not going to land it on that triple score thing. You got to rearrange it. So you disassemble the word protein, and you can make, I don't know, any number of shorter, littler words, right? So that's the same analogy. So the amino acids are the tiles. They're the individual letters that make up the protein. And your body has this great capacity of taking individual amino acids and and repurposing them. That's a, you know, that's a fun buzzword, repurposing. Yeah. So let's throw it out there, right? So your body, it sorts it all out. You don't have to do much. Just eat enough of a broad-based diet, and your body will draw from what's known as the amino acid pool, and it will restructure these amino acids into the proteins that it needs for doing whatever. And proteins make up a lot of different things, like enzymes and hormones and muscle fiber and a whole bunch of stuff. So the body just recycles and reuses these amino acids and makes what you need. So if you're not getting your protein from animal sources, which are considered complete proteins, because I need to back up a little bit here. There are 20 amino acids roughly in the human diet.
Uh-huh.
And 9 of them are what we call essential amino acids, and meaning that you have to consume them because your body cannot synthesize them on their own. Some other amino acids are what's known as conditionally essential. So if you're, this would apply to people who are in poor states of health, that kind of thing. And so anyway, your body can take these amino acids and assemble them all together. So the key, if you're vegan, vegetarian, is that you eat a wide base of food, and you will have that full complement of the essential amino acids to draw from. So again, it's super easy to do. Now, animal products typically have all the amino acids you need, but if you combine, as I mentioned, legumes and grains, you can do it very easily. So some examples, hummus and pita. So you've got chickpeas, which are your legume or your bean, and the pita is the grain. The most simple example is peanut butter sandwich.
Oh, I love peanut butter sandwiches.
Again, yeah, me too. You and Rick did a great job on the beans and rice business. So that just gives you some examples of how to combine this complementary protein business. So
do you have you had mentioned here, I'm reading your email while we're recording the show. Smart, Eric. You wanted to talk
That's
about
all right.
salt and sodium.
Yeah. If we can go there, I would like to talk about salt and sodium.
Sure, we got a couple. People aren't quite. We haven't hit 30 minutes yet, so we're at 25 minutes.
Okay. Sure. All right. Yeah. I can definitely fill up 5 minutes. So, or 25, or just hang up on me at some point. So in my cooking game, in my personal kitchen game, couple of years have really tried to kind of take my cooking skills to the next level. And I think I've gotten better. And as a dietitian, though, I'm fighting this battle of using salt or not, because the dietitian side of me is shaking her head and saying, you know, you're going to blow your blood pressure right through the roof. You cannot use that much salt. But then the eating side of me is saying, wow, this stuff is really bland. There's something missing here. So what to do? So I started digging into different types of salts, and I found that was really fascinating. And as an aside, I'm in the Southeast Michigan area. Did you know, Eric, that under the city of Detroit, there is a salt mine that has been in business for nearly 100 years?
No.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's called the Detroit Salt Company. You can do this DetroitSalt.com, I think. Yeah, it's their website, DetroitSalt.com. They've been in business for nearly 100 years. They're 1,200 feet under the ground, under the city, and they encompass 1,500 acres underneath there with 100 miles of road. That just blows my mind.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy? So when you run out of things to Google, look for the Detroit Salt Company. So back to my kitchen. So I started experimenting with different types of salts, like sea salt and Himalayan salt and kosher salt and smoked salt. And then, of course, there's iodized salt, which I really don't like. However, you know, from the health side of that, you need some iodine so you don't become deficient in that, which can lead to thyroid issues. So I don't know. Have you experimented with this at all? Do you have any thoughts on the salt part of it, of cooking and health and any of that?
Well, from what I read the science section of the New York Times, and it a lot of the avoidance of salt comes from the salts in processed foods. And I thought that the salt I'm using in my cooking would never hit that level, you know?
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. And that's one of the ways that I have kind of made peace with this whole business is I don't cook with a great excessive amount of salt, but I have found some salts that are such great finishing salts. And they just amp up the flavor of what I've made. To throw out a brand name that I actually just love is called La Baleine. I'm not going to pretend that do you know that one? It's in a red canister and it's kind of crunchy. And it's apparently, I'm reading their labels, it's exclusively sourced from our Mediterranean preserve. So anyway, that's a great salt. And it's good on... when I bake bagels, it's beautiful on the top, it's crunchy, that kind of thing. And I've also experimented with the Himalayan salt, which I have found is like super salty. You don't need much of that at all.
Right, right.
But a question that I get from my patients when we talk about salt is, you know, they'll sometimes say, well, I've switched to sea salt, so it's better, right? Not so bad health-wise. And this is what I always say. I don't care if it is sea salt, Himalayan salt. I don't care if it's driveway salt. I don't care if it's salt that you put in your water softener. I don't care if it's iodized salt. I don't care what it is. If it's salt, it's still sodium. So if you're worried about that, it's kind of an even playing field at that point. But the difference comes from the flavors. And iodized salt, yeah, we need the iodine, but the flavor on that, it just isn't that. It doesn't compare to these beautiful sea coarse salts that I have discovered. So I don't know if your thoughts on that kind of align with what I've discovered.
Yeah, I think I get iodine now from my multivitamin. So.
Okay. Yeah. I eat a fair amount of fish. And so there's ways to get around that. And iodine is found in trace amounts in vegetables. So not terribly worried about that, but it's something to think about. So,
right. Yeah. I think the iodized salt thing came from back in the day when people were not getting enough iodine from other sources. And so whoever decided the iodized salt, but that seemed to make a lot of people a lot more healthier at the time. And it seems to have stuck with us.
So. Yeah. Yes. And you're exactly right. I think that was, if I'm not mistaken, in the early 1900s, they started the iodized salt business because people were developing these huge thyroid tumors called goiters.
Yes.
And in some cases, those can actually be life-threatening. So yeah, we got rid of the goiters. And now the worry, because in healthcare, you know, we've got to wring our hands and worry about something. If people are cutting back on salt to protect their cardiovascular health, are we going to usher in a new era of iodine deficiency? So these are the kind of things that we think about.
Hey, real quick here. I was wondering if you wanted to join the Garden Fork email list. It's Maura Eric. I don't know if you want that or not. But the best way to do that, if you go to the gardenfork.tv site, there are signups all over the place. There should be one on every page. Also, in the show notes for this show, if you're listening to it in the iTunes app or one of the other podcast app, to click on the little, I think you click on the little text thumbnail of the show and the notes will pop up and there's a link in there. Or just go to gardenfork.tv and there should be a sign up there. All right. Thank you. Well, let's shift gears. People are probably almost at their destination here now, but do you, because... you're kind of being let behind the curtain here of the Garden Fork Empire. Do you have any questions about Garden Fork, or do you want to tell me why? I can tell you things, secrets about Rick or Will or anything.
Super secret. Oh, wow. Yeah. You know, maybe off air, I have some more things to ask about those two.
Yeah. Middle-aged guys, very exciting.
I have enjoyed your podcast with both of them. One of my favorites is Will's deep dive into the land of owning a campground. That was one of the best interviews ever. I just got such a kick out of that. And he also had one that was about outhouses and the all the regulations to put up an outhouse. And it brought back a great memory. My parents owned a cottage up in Upper Michigan, and they didn't have any plumbing or anything. And so my dad prefabbed an outhouse, built it, and then took it apart, strapped it to the top of his truck, and drove it up there in pieces and put it back up again. I don't know who dug the hole. I can pretty much say there was probably no permit involved in that. But at any rate, Will's rendition of that was, it made me laugh. It was interesting.
Yeah, he has he has an unending energy. I would like to have some of that, because like by 4:30, I'm toast.
Yeah, I'm pretty useless at that point too. Gosh, there was something else that he was talking about. He lives in Wisconsin, which is where my in-laws lived for a while, so we had some commonality there as well, which was fun to reminisce or think about.
Yeah, I went to grade school and middle school in Wisconsin, so it's very similar.
Yeah. I have very fond memories of our vacations in the summertime in Wisconsin. And my mother-in-law, who was also a fabulous cook and just so intuitive about flavor and seasoning and Italian, and it was just a wonderful time to go and just partake of that. So she's been a big influence. She's gone now, but I think of her so fondly when I am cranking out pasta from her pasta machine. And this is probably why I'm drawn to dietetics and food. It's just, there's a lot of warm memories and things to show your love with through food and cooking.
Yay, that's great.
Yeah.
All right, so if anyone has any questions, they could email us, and maybe we could get you back on the show sometime.
I'd love it. Sure, anytime.
So it's radio@gardenfork.tv is our email address. Rebecca, do you want me just to forward you things, or do you want people to reach out to you? Or
why don't you just forward them to me, Eric? That'd be fine. Yeah, sure.
The official Gardenfork dietitian.
I love it. Yeah, I'll add it to my resume.
That'd be great.
I'm also part of the Facebook discussion group too. So that, I don't know if that would be another way to communicate things, but I'm on that quite often. It's fun stuff on there.
Yeah, the Facebook group is really kind of, it gives me it gives me a good feeling that, there's still a lot of great people out there in the world doing cool stuff. There's someone today that just posted, they had a chicken coop and they bought, instead of having to run electricity from their house to have a light in there and a heater to keep the water from freezing, they got a solar panel and some inverter and stuff, and they put it all together and they posted the pictures, and I thought that was really cool.
I did see that. I was impressed with that as well. And you know, after all these discussions about solar, this, that, and the other between you and Will, I look at my little garden lights with, you know, a bit more respect.
Yeah.
Giving you your props.
I'm a solar geek.
All right, cool. It's cool. It's interesting. Yeah.
So thanks for taking the timer. This is kind of how Garden Fork all comes together. It's just I say something and then people email me, and then I don't reply, and then you email again. And that's exactly what you did.
And yes, I sort of had that figured out and hoped that I would hear back from you, because as I said earlier, anytime I can spread the word about nutrition, about food, about cooking, about whatever, If it brings anybody some improvement or some understanding, I am all in.
Yay. All right, everyone. Well, yeah. Thanks for listening. Any other questions, you can go to the... I'll link our discussion group in the notes of this show and send me an email, radio@gardenfork.tv, and go out and make it a great day. Garden Fork Radio's executive producer is Jimmy Gutz. You can find more information about Jimmy and the custom hollow books he makes at hollowbooks.com. Our theme music is used under license from uniquetracks.com. Other music used in the show is used under license from audioblocks.com.